Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 and WHUT TV. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. My guests are Millette Green, anchor reporter for NBC4 Washington, and Keith Alexander, reporter for The Washington Post. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I know a lot of folks want to talk about that first story that we were discussing earlier, a crime in the district, and we are going to still take your phone calls about that. But we do have some other stories that I want to get to, some important stories. Comment on anything that we are talking about today, if you like. So the government shutdown. Right now, we are about 3 days away. There is infighting in the House GOP. The Senate is trying to do something about it. But as with all things on Capitol Hill, a snail's pace, a tortoise's pace.
And a lot of brick walls.
And a lot of brick walls, exactly. But the reality, Keith, is that we've been here before. The last time, 2019, it was actually over a wall. President Trump's wall funding. But the reality is, no matter what it's about, we have real people who will be impacted if this happens. WIC recipients, federal government workers, TSA workers, mm-hmm. Just people who work in parks, the gamut.
People who apply for passports. You know, and visas. Gosh.
And that's already slow.
And that's already because of the pandemic.
Yeah, you can hang up your trip to Aruba if you don't. So when are we, or how might we get past this? And I don't mean this situation, but get to the point where it's no longer a political football and that lawmakers see this as important.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that the cast of characters have changed since 2019.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have Kevin McCarthy. You have some different characters in place who are controlling things. And I think that's what people are now looking at. So, okay, how is this going to be different? Because, you know, different cast of characters coming up into the election year. So the timing of who's in play and the timing is really going to catch people off guard, I think when people are going to say, okay, so how is McCarthy and his supporters going to really, really put up more walls with this? Because there has been some movement, but it's McCarthy and some of his groupies are saying, no, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how this does play out, given who is now in leadership and what they are pushing for.
I mean, Matt, how many of your friends out there in Prince George's County work for the federal government? All of them, practically.
Yeah, I mean, a great deal. I mean, I come from a family of government workers. That's what we do here, right?
Right.
So we're talking about so many people that we know, so many people that, you know, we work with, who have family members who depend on their government paychecks, having a good government job,
mm-hmm.
and these good government paychecks,
mm-hmm.
and how things will slow down. Just today, NBC4 profiled a mom who is worried about feeding her children. I mean, this is real life stuff, while a handful of right-wing Republicans are holding up things and threatening Speaker McCarthy's
mm-hmm.
Speakership. You got lives hanging in the balance. And you talked about the last shutdown, the longest in U.S. history, 34 days.
Yes.
And so many people suffered, and the ripple effect. It's just mm-hmm. not 1, 2, 3, snap. Oh, we've turned the lights back on. Your check is coming. This stuff is real life. I mean, Jose Andres had to open up his World Central Kitchen to help people
mm-hmm.
who couldn't put food on their
table.
Right. So the frustration continues to grow, and millions of people and millions of contractors and millions of businesses downtown. And as Keith talked about, we're still reeling from the pandemic
mm-hmm.
when so many people are not even back to their offices mm-hmm. collecting dust, businesses going out of business because there's nobody downtown as it is like there used to be. This is a crisis in Washington, and it's not going to get any better.
And it's a crisis. It's a crisis in Washington that's being played out by people who have really no connection to Washington.
No connection.
And don't even care about people in Washington.
That is such a great point.
That's the point. I mean, that is the great point, because of course, as we know, the lawmakers' checks will not stop.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and their constituents, and they're back in California, right? Their constituents all across the country are fine. It's people here in the DMV who are suffering.
Yeah, and you know, one of the other things that we saw back in 2019, even those people, as you said, Millette, with those good government jobs, were struggling. Because the reality is, and obviously we're looking in, you know, in the DMV, is that the cost of living in the DMV is disrespectfully high.
Mm-hmm.
And even those people who have great jobs, the reality is a lot of people are still living paycheck to paycheck. And as you said, Millette, you know, that 34, 35 days... there was no secret sauce where on the 36th day your paycheck came. There were still delays, not to mention the government contractors, because for years and years and years, we've always heard those rumblings and grumblings from contractors were saying, well, gosh, it's taken 30 days or 60 days for me to get paid. But when
those
there's
invoices,
a shutdown, it becomes much longer for them to get back.
And also we're now in October. We're coming right up on the holidays.
Yes.
Thanksgiving and Christmas. I mean, this, you know, and higher fuel bills for heating. I mean, this is a really crunch time for this area.
Yeah, I just turned my heat on yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Speaking of which.
Yes, absolutely. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Vernon calling from D.C. Vernon, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Good evening. I'm calling in reference to the ballot crisis.
Go right ahead.
That's what it is. It's a crisis. I'm elated to be able to, you know, be joyful about some things that were done this week. And we're beginning to nip it in the bud with, number one, the faith community came out.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking a stand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then we have most valuable assets that we can use, and those are the ex-offenders who are coming out, these old heads who see this stuff, and they're out there. We need to get more of them involved out in the streets, because most of those young people will look up to one of them or know them, or they know their fathers or one of their relatives have been shot down or something like that. And then, and this is the part we got to begin to dialogue about, where in the heck does a 14, 13-year-old get a weapon? Where are all these weapons coming from?
Let me say this, Vernon, and we've had this discussion on this program before. The incredulity that you were feeling is something that we all have felt, but the reality is, it's obviously not that difficult to get a gun. And you said, what, you know, 14 or 15-year-olds. Mm-hmm. We're talking, prepubescent children, boys, 12-year-olds, who are carjacking or walking around with guns. So yes, the guns are here. As Keith spoke about earlier, we're not just talking about regular handguns. We're talking about automatic weapons, military grade weapons. Mm-hmm. These things are happening. Are they being manufactured in the District of Columbia? There are no gun manufacturers in the District of Columbia, but they are coming from outside.
You know, when I was covering this trial, what jumped out at me
And Vernon, thank you so much for your comment. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Vernon. Yeah, you know, what jumped out at me when covering this trial of this Mochella killing was I'm hearing that, and I've seen this before, and it just dawned on me that back in the day, you know, young people were always trying to get the next Air Jordans, right? The next Jordans, who's with the next Jordans. Now, it's who's get the next clip, who got the best gun, who got the best ghost gun. And it's all about the style of gun. It's about the clip. You know, is the extended, how much of an extended clip are we talking about? It's no longer the Jordans. It is now the type of guns when they're now going on social media and posting and bragging about, as opposed to back in the day when you bragged about your sneakers and your kicks. Now these young people are bragging about the type of weapons they have.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tyrone calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Tyrone, are you there? Tyrone, give me a call back. Want to go to one of our next topics. And I find this to be a rather bizarre story. This is the Travis King story, American Army soldier who bolted across the demilitarized zone in South Korea into North Korea. He was, and I want to talk about the language, Millette, that we heard today. He was not released by North Korea. The language that was used was he was expelled by North Korea. He is now in U.S. custody. We still don't know why he ran across. He does obviously have a checkered past with his service.
Harold, this is a 23-year-old young man, Travis King, from Wisconsin. Yes, expelled. Basically, what does that say? I mean, what does it say? It says they had no use for him.
Exactly.
He was he was of low value to North Korea. There was nothing that North Korea could get in return, any concessions from Washington. Mm-hmm. That's how he was viewed. And he was basically a low-ranking serviceman. This is a private. There was no real value. I mean, that's just the bottom line here. And the Biden administration insisted, of course, it provided no concessions. So what you will see is he is now in U.S. custody. There will be no fanfare from him for him coming home. There will be no parade. He's going to face possible charges, obviously. He went AWOL.
Yeah.
And what we heard was at the beginning of all of this, when all of this happened and it took us by surprise that a black man would cross a heavily fortified border and go into North Korea, basically saying that he was not being treated well in the U.S. Army. That is what the claim is.
And isn't that amazing? He would rather go to North Korea than to stay in the U.S. Army.
Exactly.
Right. What does that say?
Yeah, I just think that story is just...
I want to sit down with this brother. I want who gets that exclusive.
It's bizarre.
There are so many questions we may never get the answers to.
And it's likely he will, at minimal, be dishonorably discharged.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
But, Millette, I think you summed it up perfectly. They saw no value. And so...
But I also wonder about his state of mind. That really jumped
out
at me.
Absolutely.
That this brother, there's something going on mentally in him that he would just he's also at that age, right? You know, between 18 and 23, that's when young black men, that's when mental illness kicks in, and he's also right at that age. So I'm wondering what he was also wrestling with as well.
There will definitely have to be a mental health evaluation, obviously, to get to the bottom of what is going on and to get more answers.
Yeah. Real quick, back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tyrone calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. You called back. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing today, sir?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Go right ahead.
My name is Tyrone Jones. I've been a resident in Washington, D.C. my entire life. I just came home from incarceration after 22 years.
Welcome home.
I've been in and out of jail since I was 10. listen to me. You want to know the answer and how to change and correct what's going on? The first thing you need to do is we all need to respect the Constitution. We need to read it and learn it and understand it. Second, we need to correct it and explain the definitive reason of Lady Justice and equally allow balance across the world, the nation, first and foremost, before change can be enacted.
So, Tyrone, let me, I got to stop you there. I agree. But I can't imagine anyone having that conversation with a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, or 12-year-old who is already literally standing at the precipice of being claimed by the streets.
Let me just follow real quick. Tyrone, you said since you've been 10 years old, you've been in the system. What did you do at 10 years old that led you to your first arrest?
This is how I went. I was late for school. My mother told me to go to school. I was late. She don't even know this to this day. So I was late. I missed my school bus. I was going to school in Landover, Maryland. I went outside. So I went to go. I needed a ride. I said, well, I'm going to go steal me a car to get to school. This is how God works and how good God is. He sent me outside to go steal that car, and I got caught by a federal officer.
So let me say, okay, Tyrone, I don't have a lot of time. I got to stop you. And I know it was 22 years ago, but what on earth would possess you at 10 years old because you were late to school, late getting to school, that you would steal a car? I mean, help me with that, because
I'm gonna help you understand.
Yeah, real quick, because that doesn't. There have been times when I've been when I was a kid and I was, you know, when I was late to school.
I would turn around and go back home.
So I'd go back home. You know,
this is the disconnect.
Okay, help me with that.
This is the disconnect. Us parents around the world, we're not paying attention enough to these kids.
Right, but hold on, Tyrone, let me listen, because I don't. Why would you steal a car to get to school?
Let me tell you what happened.
I only have a little bit of time. What happened?
I was very fast in advance, and I was trying to be grown. And then that fastness and that grown is I made a bad decision. And that's what made me do it.
Did you have other friends at that age who were doing that? Did you hang out with boys and even females, girls?
Everybody in my environment was doing it.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, because I like I said, Keith said it, I said it. We know Millette was never late to school, but I know. Yeah, there were times when I missed the bus. And there may have been other parents in the community who were either going to take us, or I went back home
or started walking.
But he also said something that was very interesting that goes back to the point I made early on, which is he said it was his environment. Everyone in his environment at that time was doing the same thing.
Yeah, he buried the lead there.
We have got to put these young people. He was 10 years old when he made a decision that changed the trajectory of his life. So we've got to put these young people at an early age in an environment that is positive, that is upward mobile, that they don't have a chance to get out of to hang around with young people or riffraff that's going to take them down a wrong path.
But also,
that's what we have to do. We got to save them when they're young and they still listen to us. And we still have them in our grips and in our arms.
But parents also need to know who their kids are hanging with. And I think that's also a problem. A lot of days, these parents do not know the backgrounds of the young people that their kids are hanging with.
Or their parents.
Or their parents.
And sometimes the parents are the ones also caught up in that lifestyle.
My mom
well.
Knew everything about all my friends and their parents as well.
Exactly. Tyrone, like I said, welcome home.
Welcome home, Tyrone.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Let me go to Charles calling from Virginia. Charles, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I have a comment. I was looking at your program here.
Well, thank you.
And I have a comment about the crime that's going on in D.C., especially on the borderline of Maryland. I tell you, it's been years going on in D.C. You're not the first to start it. You have to, but if you can consider looking at crime in D.C., even solving crime, you have to look at the young police officers that you're bringing from inner town, out of town, from Jersey, New York, down Atlanta, out of town.
Montana, West Virginia. Yeah, these very red states, yes.
Yeah, let me tell you something. It's the crime in D.C., you focus so much on the kids, but you're not focused on the police department that bring the crime, the drugs, the guns, and all that, and the gangs. You know, if you look at the gang, if you look at the gangs real closely, I'm a police officer myself. If you look at the gangs real closely, you'll see what part the police plays in the gang. And you'll see what parts the police play in the drugs that's in the city and how the gangs operate. No one wants to take time, but they want to blame these black kids for something that's caused by grown-ups.
So let me ask you this real quick. What role? Be specific. What exactly are you saying?
I'm saying if you are looking to solve crime in D.C. and Maryland, you have to look at the police department. This is what I'm saying. No one wants to hear that because, you know, you look at the kids, it's easy to put things on the kids. Don't know kids bring drugs in. Don't know kids make guns. Don't know kids start gangs.
Are you saying that police officers are helping these kids and supplying them with weapons and drugs? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry to say that. And I hope you don't spread my name along. I'm a police officer. Yes, I am. I'm saying the police runs the gangs in D.C. and Maryland.
That is an eye-popping allegation, Millette, that police officers are supplying these young people with guns and drugs. And I'm not saying that all police officers are perfect, but
that's the first I've heard of this.
But that's an eye popping allegation. Just out of the blue.
Obviously, you know, the caller said he was a law enforcement officer.
Right.
If we are to believe that, I mean, obviously he knows something that we don't know, but we have reported, Keith has reported, we've reported on department heads, sheriff, and the like being part of some kind of criminal enterprise. I think was it the Charles County Sheriff who was arrested in a gun controversy?
You're talking about the Frederick County Sheriff.
Frederick County.
Yes.
I mean, so we know that there are bad actors in law enforcement, not the whole department.
Right,
we
exactly.
Know that there are bad actors at work in various levels to contribute to the problem that we're seeing on the street. It is not a one-solved solution issue. We've got to target this problem from different ways and angles to really save our children. That's what I'm most concerned about. What's the future going to look like for D.C. young people who are growing up or not growing up because their lives are cut short?
Yeah.
Well, I would just real quick, as someone who covers D.C. police officers and I've covered cases involving sexual assault, police abuse, I have yet to see any cases involving officers who are involved in illegal gun and drug trade. I'm not saying they don't exist. I just have yet to see them. And if anyone out there knows of any cases, please contact me because I am very intrigued by this comment in this statement.
I want to move to this next issue. And this is something else I'm really not surprised about, that facial recognition is a problem for people of color, particularly black people, and that there is a lawsuit out of Atlanta where this man is suing over the use of facial technology by a sheriff's detective And actually, it's out of Louisiana. He was arrested for crimes that he did not commit. But you know, Keith, I must say, when this technology first came out, when it was being used in the years after 9/11, I remember a lot of the
American civil liberties. You know?
Yeah, the news reports. I'm just going to, you know, this technology is probably created by people who don't care about black people, or not care, but not think about black people when they're doing. They're just, everybody's the same. Mm-hmm. But we realize that everyone is not the same.
And now we'll add not only facial technology, but also recognition, but also now AI. And I'm just curious how now AI is going to play with this whole technology, because now we're taking it to a 21st level, 21st century level that we haven't even thought about. And I heard, you know, you agree with me on that. It's like, we're curious as to what role AI is going to now play in this whole technology. It's going to take it to a whole different level. And people are concerned now. Just wait for a few more years. Mark my words, we'll be talking about this more in depth moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, it just scares me. I mean, the thought of this, it's a fact that it has misidentified people of color at a higher rate, and more often, women.
Yes.
Less accurate with darker-skinned people, especially women. And this is used in policing.
Prosecutors
and
all the time.
And, you know, when we try to identify protesters, this is some scary stuff. And then Keith injected AI into this, which just adds to the scariness of this and the impact on people of color and how are we supposed to function. I am going to be living in fear. It's a threat to my mental health. You know, the thought of constantly being watched and constantly being watched as a criminal, is somebody perceiving me as a criminal. I still go into high-end department stores and have people follow me around. That happened just this week.
Well, they wanted your autograph and all that. That's what that was.
they
wanted your autograph.
No, they didn't. I wish it were the case. Yeah. But sadly, it is still a reality for many of us.
And I mean, also, it's the capturing. It's not just the recognition. It's the capturing that our recognition is being captured and stored in databases out there. That also what's really concerning is that they are holding on to these images for such a time that they think they need for a charge or for an arrest or for a suspect or whatever. But these images are being captured and stored in databases around the country.
I've got two more stories I really need to get to in these last few minutes. One of the other stories really troubling, this high school student out of Texas, Darryl George, suspended twice for his locks hairstyle. And, you know, Millette, the thing that I think is just fascinating to me is that Texas has the Crown Act, has had the Crown Act since May. This just happened this new school semester.
We're still talking about Texas.
Yes.
And we're talking about a young man. I mean, there's a bigger picture and then there's the smaller picture. There's a 17-year-old, Darryl George, who is in school suspension. He is not getting an education with this experience. His family is dug in. They are not wealthy people. They have lawsuits going and all of that. And the bigger picture is we are still dealing with the way in which we wear our hair is a problem for other people. Where we have to satisfy someone else. And that's the bottom line. Our hair is a threat.
Yeah.
Our hair is a threat.
Keith, real quick, some thoughts about
that. You know, I might be on the other side of this because there's a policy in place, there's a rule in place.
Yeah, but you have curly wavy.
But there is a policy in place in the school system that the hair cannot, if it's let down, it can't be over the collar. You know, it can't be over, below, down to the eyebrows. They have that in place. And so if that has been in place and those are the rules, My question is, okay, so what are you doing here? You knew what the rules were.
But does that supersede the state law that was signed in May?
The Crown Act. And in this particular case, this young man wears his hair up.
Right.
So it's not falling below his below whatever the
before the collar, right? But if he were to take it down, it would be below the collar. All I'm just saying that this has been on the books for a while in that school system, and yes, there is a law, a state law. So I think what's happening, my heart goes out to this kid because I'm wondering if he is unfortunately being put into a position with lawyers to be a martyr. For this cause. And that's what really concerns me more than anything else.
Lesson, mm-hmm. Definitely a lesson for everyone as we look at this. We'll see him in law school in a couple of years. I guarantee you that.
At Howard,
probably. Exactly. Real quick, okay. McDonald's starting next month is going to serve mumbo sauce. They spell
is it mumbo or mambo?
Yeah, right. So I said mambo because it's spelled mambo, but the mumbo, the original mumbo is spelled M U M. They spell it M A M. So, you know, and I had a friend of mine call me today. She's not happy about it. She says it's cultural appropriation. Millett, what is it?
You know, I'm a native Washingtonian. I grew up on chicken wings and mumbo sauce at the corner store. Okay.
Okay.
And
corner store.
Salt, pepper, ketchup. Salt, pepper, ketchup.
real quick, Keith, what
I'm
do you think?
I'm all in favor of it because it does give recognition and put D.C. recipe on the map.
Yeah, okay.
We control the narrative.
All right.
As long as McDonald's owns up to it and cites that this is homage to D.C.
Let us hope so. Look, I got to get out of here. Millett Green, Keith Alexander, thank you both for spending some time with us. That is The Daily Drum on WHUR and WHUT and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.